If you like Rogan and Rodney, be sure to check out Petros and Money. Hear them live weekdays at 3 on AM 570 LA Sports or podcast their show on the iHeartRadio app by searching Petros and Money.
AM 570,
an LA sports icon.
Fred Rogan is here tonight.
Decades on your television covering Los Angeles sports.
Fred Rogan, huge in Los Angeles.
The Dean.
I'm the Dean.
Fred Rogan.
Weekdays before Petros and Money.
A USC All-American.
USC's Rodney Peet.
An NFL quarterback.
Absolutely perfectly delivered by Rodney
Peet.
Available on the iHeartRadio app or on AM570LASports.com.
This is Rogan and Rodney.
And we continue Fred Rogan and Rodney Peet on AM570 LA Sports. Later on this hour, Bill Oram, Laker insider, jumps on the show. Lakers and the Jazz again tonight. They won the first meeting between the two. And AD getting closer. So Bill may have an update on when AD will be back. Now, there are two things we want to talk to Dylan Hernandez about. Dylan comes on the show, and his passion is soccer. And there is a story that even if you don't really follow soccer and know this, there are 4 billion soccer fans on the planet. This is pretty big. We're going to get to that in a second. But also, Dylan believes that the Dodgers better be looking over their shoulder and be a little bit worried about the Padres. Dylan, how are you today?
I am great. How are you guys?
We're doing fine. Let's start with your Dodger take. And you think that the Padres are the real deal and the Dodgers ought to pack up right and just call it right now?
Well, no. I mean, if you keep reading, right? So, you know, they're a good team. Look, and part of me, honestly, going into this weekend thought, okay, well, that's cute what the Padres did over the offseason, you know, but I was kind of, part of me was expecting actually the Dodgers to just slow down there and completely curb stomp them, you know, win every game by 4 runs, and it's like, okay, well, maybe next year, Padres. You know, yeah, the Padres are a real team, right? They're going to be competitive here, and, you know, obviously the Dodgers' depth gives them huge advantage. Dave Roberts even admitted yesterday that he managed that game differently because it was an April game. And because, you know, they have 5.5 months of season left, right? They, in the kind of crucial situation in that game, they went to the inexperienced Dennis Santana rather than go to Knebel or Trinan or the guys that they would normally go to in that situation because of workload, you know, considerations. Also, you know, Cody Bellinger, I mean, you're talking about a guy who just the MVP 2 years ago wasn't there. So, yeah, like, look, the Dodgers are the favorites. Make no mistake about that. But, you know, you go back a few years, you know, a pretty unspectacular Rockies team pushed them to game 163. You know, and if that could happen, you know, stranger things have happened, right? Guys get hurt over the course of a season. Things go bad. You get in a bad rut. Hey, you know, this is like a real team. This isn't just going to be a cakewalk to another division title. They're going to have to play, frankly, the kind of baseball they did this past weekend. I mean, these were, you know, for the most part, you know, again, outside of that throwing error by Seager Sunday, you know, the Dodgers kind of limited their mistakes, you know, I think really kind of, and not only that, but made the big plays when they had to, right? In the Saturday game, there was that great double play that Chris Taylor turned, the, you know, game-saving catch by Mookie Betts. And that's kind of what's characterized, I think, Dodger baseball here in the last, you know, even like last year was in those moments that they had to make those plays, they went and they made them, you know? And so, yeah, over the course of a 6-month season, if I'm betting, I'm betting on the Dodgers, but like, hey, like stranger things have happened.
Yeah, they're competitive, and they have gotten better. I believe they were knocking on the door last year, and I think they did get better in the offseason. But to suggest that this is a true rivalry, that's going a few steps too far, isn't it, Dylan? Because don't you have to win a little something before you can be a rival with a franchise like the Dodgers? I mean, I get the Giants because they came out here. They've actually won titles recently, and it is a true rivalry. But San Diego, just because they got good in the last couple of years, doesn't make them, oh, now all of a sudden they're the biggest rival of the Dodgers.
Yeah, but I think if you watch these games, right, the truth is, like, each game could have gone either way. Now, the Dodgers, I guess, theoretically, you could say, could have swept the Padres. But I think, conversely, you know, the Padres could have swept the Dodgers. I mean, you know, there's going to be a series, by the way, right? You know, they have, what, 18 games left? So that's probably, what, 5 or 6 series left? The Padres are going to win a couple of these, right? They're going to be a couple where they actually win the series. And frankly, you know, there's the way the system's set up. I mean, the team with the best record is going to play the wild card, you know, the winner of the wild card playing game. So most likely, these guys are going to face each other in the divisional round. It's a five-game series. Now, again, in a seven-game series, like the deeper team has the advantage. In a five-game sprint, actually the way these Padres are set up, again, it could be like a real threat there. You got a guy in Yu Darvish. I think when he's right, is actually the best pitcher on either team. I think we saw that.
Whoa, wait. You said Yu Darvish, when right, is the best pitcher on either team?
Yeah.
On the Dodgers or Padres?
Yeah. I really think that.
I'm just trying to get it straight. I'm giving you an opportunity to correct that because I'm giving you
I just want you to get that straight
because you're about to get bombarded by people saying, are you out of your mind? He's better than Walker Buehler. He's better than Trevor Bauer. Is that what you're saying?
I am saying that, yeah. I would take that. Yeah. Now there's a when he's right qualifier there, right?
What year will that be?
I mean, I thought he was pretty right on Saturday. I mean, he was, you could argue he outpitched Kershaw. And he pitched he gave his team a whole inning more. Now, the bullpen, obviously, situation, right? The Dodgers have the bullpen to turn to, so maybe that doesn't make a difference. But you know what? In a five-game series, a lot of times you can ride like a hot pitcher, if he's going to pitch twice in the series, that could be the difference. He is a guy that's capable of doing that. And frankly, all five of the kind of big guns, so to speak, on both, the three on the Dodgers and, between Darvish and Snell on the Padres, I mean, there are five guys there that could theoretically have a series like that, right? But I'm just saying, like, it's not inconceivable that in a five-game series, the Padres take these guys down. That's very, very possible. Five games isn't anything, right? That's a very short series. Again, in a seven-game series, I think that kind of favors the Dodgers, but they're gonna probably wind up meeting in a five-game series in the divisional round. So I'm just saying, would I bet on it? Not necessarily, but I'm just saying it could happen.
Dylan Hernandez with us, Fred Rogan, Rodney Pete on AM570 LA Sports. All right, Dylan, you're a huge soccer guy, and this is a story that really has overwhelmed the soccer world. I know in Los Angeles, if you're a casual fan, you're an MLS fan, you're LAFC, or you're the Galaxy. But really, soccer is prevalent around the world. And they're creating something called a Super League with the top clubs in the world. And people do not seem to be pleased with this. Can you spell it out?
Yeah. So now, this idea of a Super League has existed since I was like a kid. They've been talking about this for like 30 years, right? It's just kind of never happened. And, in theory, again, it's to kind of take like the biggest brand name clubs and putting them into one league. Now, my understanding is this league isn't going to, this doesn't mean say that Real Madrid and Barcelona are going to leave the Spanish league. I believe that this is supposed to be kind of a midweek competition, that basically is going to replace the Champions League right now. Right now, the Champions League is a league where teams have to qualify for, right? So kind of depending on which league you're in, the criteria is different. If you're in a competitive league, like the English Premier League, I believe the top four teams there get in.
Right.
Some countries maybe have like one berth and so forth. Now, what this would do is basically kind of eliminate the qualification process. So, Liverpool and Arsenal will get an automatic berth into this league every year. I believe it's going to be a 20-team league with 15 of these spots just kind of locked down, and they're going to be kind of five qualification berths. And now I think the reason people are upset again is the Champions League is something that you qualify for, right? It's something that is earned. And not just that, but also soccer has this tradition of promotion and relegation, right? Where, kind of this idea that, like, your place is guaranteed is just kind of very offensive over there. Teams like, in the early 80s, like Nottingham Forest was the European champion at some point. Nottingham Forest from England, they're like a third or fourth division team in England now, right? Like, stuff like that can happen. And so this idea that they're just going to kind of like lock these teams in regardless of how they're doing, isn't sitting well, because now all of a sudden, if you're one of these English teams that say isn't part of this group, like, well, what are we going out there for almost, right? Why can't we get a chance to be part of this thing? And I think a lot of it honestly had to do with the pandemic and fans not being able to go to the stadiums. A lot of teams lost revenue, and as it is, there's a lot of these teams are now carrying a tremendous amount of debt. And I really think that that's what this is about, is that they want to remove kind of the qualification process, because that is like, that threatens basically their income. You know, if they don't make it to the Champions League and they end up in the Europa League, which is kind of like the NIT of European soccer, you know, the difference in revenue is pretty staggering, right? And, you know, a team doesn't qualify for the Champions League. We see this all the time. Team doesn't qualify for the Champions League. The next year, they basically have to sell all their players because they can't afford them anymore. So I think it's a way for the big clubs to basically, you know, just kind of have financial stability, you know. And it's kind of funny, right, because like in MLS, we do not have promotion relegation, you know, and a lot of people here think that, well, you know, until you do that, it's not like a real soccer thing. You know, the commissioner of MLS will say, well, that just can't work in this country because no investor would invest, you know, into right. a soccer team. Nobody would buy a soccer team if there was a chance that they could end up in the third division at some point, you know. So, you know, yeah. So, but it goes against really just about everything about what European soccer is about, you know, or just soccer, you know, around the world where, you know, the team, say, Cholos and right, Tijuana, you know, they were, I believe, like a third division team in Mexico. You know, they got bought by a, you know, wealthy owner who just started putting a ton of money into it. And now this team, you know, that was not thought of before at all before is all of a sudden kind of a player in Mexican soccer now. Right. And that's kind of part of the fun of these things is, you know, that everybody theoretically has a chance. And so it's just really kind of eliminating that competition aspect of it, I think.
Do you think that this experiment is more, I guess it's past an experiment. It looks like they're moving forward towards doing this, that this could be a catalyst for some of the other sports leagues around the world. And what comes to mind, because I heard somebody mention it, that, you know, possibly the NCAA teams, the big schools, big five conferences, some of those schools could break off and create their own super conference and go from there. Could that happen?
Yeah, I guess I could, you know, and if you kind of think about it, right, you do wonder, I mean, you know, does the SEC really need to do that in football? It's probably already there. But, yeah, I mean, I guess so, you know. Now, that said, I do wonder if this thing's actually going to happen. I mean, at this point, you know, UEFA is threatening to ban, you know, all these teams, you know, like I'm guessing a lot of these domestic leagues will threaten to expel teams, you know, that Real Madrid say will not be able to play in the Spanish league anymore. You know, and there are also international competitions to consider. The, you know, UEFA, who's the governing body in Europe, is saying, you know, if you participate in the Super League, you will not be able to participate in international competitions. And, you know, as much as, you know, these players make their money playing club soccer. That said, you know, I think every kid that ever kicks a ball dreams of playing like in a World Cup, right? So, are you really willing to kind of sacrifice all that? I mean, I just saw today that there was a story in The Guardian about how the English culture minister says, you know, the government's going to do everything they can to prevent the six Premier League teams from leaving the Premier, you know, or to participate in this thing. So I think that there's kind of a long way still to actually get to that point. I still question whether this thing's actually going to happen.
Yeah, but how could, for example, the Premier League, because I know you touched on it, but, you know, FIFA said any player that plays in this thing could be banned from the World Cup. And how could the Premier League say, all right, Arsenal and Tottenham and Chelsea and Man U, Man City, whoever, you guys want to play in this? You're out of the Premier League. They can't do that. They wouldn't. How are they going to do that?
Well, because I do think that, like, the one thing what's interesting here is that the overwhelming negative reaction towards this concept of a Super League, right? Everybody is against it. I have not, outside of the people associated with these clubs, I have not seen a single person come out in favor of this idea. You know, right now, you know, I saw somewhere where a former Manchester United player came out, Gary Neville came out and really just kind of railed United, you know, for, right, you know, he was talking about the history of the club, that it was, you know, started, right, it was this working class club, and right, theoretically, again, this concept of open competition was important. And I mean, he's bashing this thing. So I think that, like, right now, these clubs are all viewed in a very, very negative light, to where, you know, any action. Put it this way: the fact that, like, I mean, you know, UEFA, like, they're, you know, presidents are, you know, executives are, like, frequently busted for, like, corruption charges and stuff. I mean, this is not. You know, again, we think of, you know, people think of UEFA the way they do it, like the NCAA. Like, nobody likes them. And the fact that UEFA is the good guy in this situation, I think speaks to, again, just how unpopular this idea is right now. I think that, like, any time you have, like, 99.9% of the population against something, there's a chance it might not happen.
All right. Well, Dylan, we appreciate you coming on and trying to explain all of it. It really is a huge story around the world, and it will be fascinating to see. In the Champions League, trying to remember, did the MLS champion get to play in the Champions League, or that was just Europe?
That's just Europe. So the Champions League is the UEFA Champions League, so that's the European. Now, where our clubs theoretically have a chance is there's something called the Club World Cup, where the champions of all the continents get in. And, you know, like last year, LAFC got to the championship of the CONCACAF Champions League.
Right.
Right. And they lost there. But had they won, they, in theory, would have advanced to, you know, play in that Club World Cup. Now, there is one. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, too. This does affect Americans. You know, there are a lot of American players now playing at Champions League clubs. You know, Christian Pulisic, obviously, is at Chelsea. Weston McKennie is at Juventus. Those are two of the Super League teams. You know, and that's one of the reasons I think some of us think that, hey, the U.S. could make a run at the next World Cup. Well, you know, this could be the thing that unravels it all.
Right, because if those guys play, then they're out of the World Cup.
Correct, yeah, and we just could not have that. So, you know, and that's why, again, like, I think, though, that, you know, if you're a kid like Christian Pulisic, I'm sure that's what you grew up dreaming about, right? It's like, you know, yeah, you want to go play in Europe and this and that, but you know, every kid, again, the dream is the World Cup, you know, and I don't, especially after they didn't qualify last time, is he going to be willing to, like, sacrifice that? You know, maybe at that point you move to, like, a smaller team, take a little less money, you know, and still get a chance to play in that World Cup that you always wanted to play in.
All right. Dylan, thank you for coming on today. Good stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Lakers tonight, Utah. They won the first between the two. No guarantees about tonight. But will AD... No guarantees.
Oh. Make a guarantee, Fred. You're so bold today.
No guarantees about
tonight. All your predictions.
No, my predictions have all been right today.
No, okay. The guarantee was already made. They're going to lose tonight because you said they'd win one.
Right. All right. Well.
So you're guaranteeing they're going to lose tonight based on your statement from last week.
I said they'd win one. They might get lucky and win two.
No, you said they would win one.
Oh, all right. Well, I guess there's a guarantee. Anyway, Bill Oram will join us next. All in one app.
Bringing you LA's best sports talk weekdays, noon to 3.
Rogan and Rodney.
Hey, sip, slide, trying to provide for me.
Let's go. Happy Monday. Rodney P., Fred Rogan, AM 570 LA Sports. Hope you had a great weekend. You know that's the hideaway. And we're looking forward to a great week, Freddie.
We are indeed. Tonight, the Dodgers in Seattle and the Lakers taking on the Jazz. Let's bring on our Laker insider, Bill Oram. Bill, how are you today?
I'm doing well, fellas. How are you?
Doing fine. Let's start with what happened over the weekend. Nice win for the Lakers. Dennis Schroeder played well. Don't tell me that's all that Jazz, because the Lakers were equally tasked.
Oh, you see what he did there?
I did. Listen, I don't know why you're trying to bring the pun game to me, Fred.
That's
like,
true.
You know that is my domain.
Yes.
And you just...
I don't know why I did that. That was my bad, Bill. I apologize.
It's beneath you. I mean, listen, it's my level, but you're better than that. I'm not. You are.
All right. Well, puns aside, Dennis Schroeder looked awfully good against Utah the other night.
Yeah, you know, he's had his moments in this stretch. I mean, the Lakers have really needed him over these, we're coming up on, you know, 5 weeks since LeBron James got injured. 2 months without Anthony Davis. So he's either been the second or first option offensively for a pretty big stretch of the season here. And, you know, some nights have been better than others, but I think you've really seen him kind of come into his own as kind of a guy who, at least offensively, can handle that scoring load. He looked good against the Jazz. The Lakers needed somebody, especially down the stretch. When you talk about going from, you know, where you have, you know, you're playing a Jazz team that is completely shorthanded also, and you're losing a lead, you're seeing a double-digit lead completely disappear, you're down in the final seconds, you need a go-to scorer. You need somebody who can go get you a bucket. And I know that in the postseason, that's going to be LeBron, it's going to be Anthony Davis, but it's got to feel good to know that you also have a guy like Dennis Schroeder who can go get you that bucket also if those first two options aren't there. So, you know, a confidence builder for Dennis Schroeder, a quality win in terms of just stacking them up in this time, you know, without LeBron and AD, even though that's getting a lot closer to them being back. So, you know, kind of a quality night for the Lakers. Now they just have to go do it again against a Jazz team that is presumably going to be a lot more whole.
And doesn't, you know, or don't wins like this do a little bit extra for them too, especially now? I mean, since they don't have LeBron and they don't have AD, you talked about this with the Brooklyn victory, that it's something that Frank Vogel pointed to, that hey, see, we can go win and do some really positive things without these guys. Same thing, you know, albeit Utah didn't have a lot of their players, but still during this stretch, they played well. And to your point, they're going to need those guys when LeBron and AD come back to be in a groove, and that will assist them in some of the scoring. So it is it's some of these games that I think are more encouraging than just a win. It's just how guys are playing, like you mentioned with Schroeder, and then fighting like they did against Brooklyn.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the more examples like that you can have and that you can point to, you know, the better off you're going to be, just to kind of, you know, point to and say, hey, we survived that stretch without LeBron and Anthony Davis. This team is more than just, you know, two superstars and then, you know, assorted supporting cast. You know, I think that we would all say that this stretch, you know, these 2 months have probably gone better than you would have expected. I mean, the Lakers are in position to be, you know, the fourth or fifth seed, you know, going into the playoffs. You know, that matchup is looking pretty appealing with Denver banged up, obviously dealing with the Jamal Murray injury. So there's, you know, a real path here for the Lakers, maybe more than you would have expected when they did lose their two stars to long-term injuries.
Do we know when AD is coming back?
No, K-N-O-W, question mark. No, N-O. But we do have a guess, and I think an informed guess, which would be, you know, based on what Frank Vogel said, you know, there was always kind of these Utah games were probably unlikely, but that the, Dallas later this week, there was a real possibility. And so that's Thursday and Saturday. Thursday will mark 1 week since he was fully cleared. I think there's a good chance that you'll see him on Thursday night against Dallas. Now, you know, we haven't talked to Frank Vogel for a couple of days, and he's played this stuff pretty close to the vest as it is. But, you know, I would think that if you're kind of reading the tea leaves, which is something I've become very good at this year, as we've kind of had to, you know, kind of guesstimate on a lot of stuff because we're not around these guys as much as we used to be. I would right now put a small wager on him being on the court on Thursday. But hopefully we'll get a better sense of that from Frank Vogel tonight when we speak with him.
Rodney made a point earlier in the show, and I thought it was a really good point to make. So Dennis Schroeder is now really trying to assert himself and taking charge. I understand there'll be an adjustment when AD gets back for Andre Drummond. But how much of an adjustment now, since Dennis Schroeder is trying to assert himself, will there be for him when LeBron and AD get back?
I mean, I think there will be an adjustment for really everyone, just because, you know, everybody really had to take on a bigger role and more of a lion's share of the offense. But to me, LeBron James is a pretty easy guy to play with in terms of, you know, getting guys the ball, you know, get to the wing, you're going to get opportunities. So I think, you know, I think Schroeder had started to get pretty comfortable, at least with those guys. Before he had his, or before LeBron and AD went out. So I think that it's going to be a pretty seamless transition for the guys who did play with LeBron and AD. And I think for Drummond also, I mean, it's interesting just because I don't know that, you know, Drummond has gotten the opportunity that he would have expected when he signed, because the toe has been an issue. You know, he ought to still know that he's gotten the reps that he would have expected to be kind of become kind of a workhorse for the Lakers in the sense that you would have expected. So maybe his showcase time is a little lesser than he might have figured, because I think you could have probably broken up what he expected this stint with the Lakers to look like. You've got the part where you're going to be able to showcase your offensive talents, you're going to get a lot of post-ups, and then LeBron and AD are going to come back and you're going to probably take on more of a supporting role. You're going to become more of a complimentary player. And I think he's going to be in that complimentary role a little faster than he might have expected, or just after, you know, fewer appearances than he might have expected. But again, you know, that's a guy who signed on for a very specific role and presumably with eyes pretty clearly wide open of what that job was going to look like when they came back. So I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. And I think there's going to be a lot of easy buckets for him just because of the way AD and LeBron open things up for everyone else. I mean, we saw a lot of lobs, you know, you remember to Dwight and JaVale a year ago. And obviously Drummond's a different player than those two, and a more dynamic and obviously younger player than those guys. But I think that, you know, a lot of those same kind of easy looks are going to be there for him that we grew accustomed to seeing from Dwight and JaVale.
And how do you see the rotation playing out, Bill? Obviously, right now, without LeBron and AD, there's a lot of guys are getting opportunities to play. The trade and bringing McLemore, who's a sharp shooter from three. How do you see the rotation and guys like Wes Matthews and guys like McLemore and even Talen Horton-Tucker? How do you see that playing out once the playoffs start?
Well, I mean, you know, in the playoffs, you tend to start thinking about, an 8-9-man rotation, and that gets a little trickier. You know, I think, Wesley Matthews is obviously a veteran who gives you more defense than Ben McLemore. I mean, I still think Ben McLemore is kind of your 13th guy, or kind of on the fringes of the rotation, or maybe in sort of, dire situations, or when you're really hurting from three. I don't see him as a guy you're seeing in the rotation every night. I think Talen Horton-Tucker, though, has established himself as that kind of player, and I think he slots in ahead of even Wesley Matthews on the depth chart. So I think that I think we have a good sense of what the rotation is, just because of kind of the different scenarios we've seen over the course of this year. And then I think the interesting thing is going to be the big men. Like, what about Markieff Morris? That's a guy who has been so good for the Lakers over this stretch. But when you get Anthony Davis back, you're playing Andre Drummond. Kyle Kuzma is going to play more four. Where does Markieff Morris get minutes? What about the Montrezl Harrell, Marc Gasol situation, where, does that become matchup based against Denver? Do you end up using Gasol and sitting Harrell? There's a lot of nuance to this. And I think one thing that we can kind of point to, at least, is Frank Vogel's not afraid to make those kinds of decisions. We saw it last year in the postseason when, Dwight and JaVale were essentially completely out of the rotation for the Houston series. And then they came back and had, Dwight especially had much bigger roles in the conference finals against Denver, and then again against Miami, especially early in that series. So I think it's going to be a lot of matchup based. But in terms of the wings that you're talking about, I would be surprised if we see a lot of Ben McLemore in the playoffs. I just think that he's more of an insurance type player, a guy who has a skill that the Lakers don't have. So if KCP and everyone else is cold from the perimeter, You've got kind of a microwave on the bench that you can turn to and try to generate some offense.
Okay, well, that's kind of a bummer because we both like Ben McLemore.
Well, he's played well. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's played well and he shot the ball well. But the opportunity is there for him right now. And when the Lakers get whole, I'm just not sure that there's going to be that same kind of opportunity. You lose a lot defensively with Ben McLemore. Not that he doesn't try on that end of the floor, but he's just not going to give you the same kind of defensive results traditionally that you get from Wes Matthews, KCP, and really even Talen Horton-Tucker, who's really establishing himself as a defender at these early stages of his career.
Cool. All right. Well, Bill, thanks for coming on. Appreciate the insight as always.
My pleasure, guys. Have a good day.
You too. There goes our Laker insider, Bill Orem. And Rodney, I do want to talk about two things when we come back. One of them we touched on the tees, and of course that was the fight this weekend, if you want to call it that, and who paid for that thing. And the other thing was there was some complaining about the umpiring in the Dodger game yesterday. We'll touch on that as well. Next hour, we'll do a little USC spring football. We'll get to that.
I like that.
You like it?
Always like that.
All right, then we'll do that next hour. I was born
in the city. That's right, Fred. You were born in the city of Detroit.
Yep.
Right on. Little Black Pumas for you. Let's go on a Monday. Rodney Pete, Fred Morogan. Is it Fred Morogan or Fred Rogan?
Either way. As long as the check clears, I don't care, Rodney.
All good. All good.
All right. We talked about it in the tease when we came on at noon. The Jake Paul fight over the weekend. So my son Josh said, we've got to watch this thing. We got to buy the fight. I'm like, okay. I don't know. Snoop is great. Snoop is always good. He was one of the commentators.
Yep.
But, man.
Pete Davidson was great, too. He was calling it like he saw it. It's like, what the hell are we doing?
Right. He's a comedian.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, but, I mean, God, it just really lost a lot of its luster. I mean, Knocking out Nate Robinson was great because that was fun and it was different.
It was different. It was new. But then, you know, you got an old washed up MMA guy that doesn't really care. And nobody knew who he was really until this whole thing came about. So, and I think a lot of people were hoping, okay, including Dana White, by the way, was hoping that this would, you know, kind of be the one, okay, you're fighting somebody that actually is a fighter, not a former basketball player that, you know, just started training a month before the fight. You're finding some guy that actually had fights in MMA, so you think it's going to be somewhat legit. And you know, the press conferences are the press conference and all that stuff leading up to it. But then you see him kind of get ready for the fight, meaning Ben Askren, and he didn't look right, didn't look in shape, didn't look like he took it seriously, and he got caught. And, you know, got back up, and then they stopped it. It was to me, it was bad. It was bad.
I mean, the referee was like 90 years old.
Yeah.
And he got up, so let him go. But, I mean, they called it immediately, and I thought, nah, they had this set. You know, this guy, he didn't want to get clocked like that, but, you know, he was going to take one and go down. In the fight before, I don't know if you saw this.
Oh, God, that made it. That was the worst part about the night.
The fight before, where the guy got, I don't know where he got hit, and he was on the ground for 15 minutes?
But he didn't get hit. That's the whole point. He didn't get hit and claimed he, first of all, he was claiming it was a low blow, and so they kept replaying it, and it turned out that the punch missed. Missed him completely, and Mario Lopez was great on it. He kept saying, it's not a good look for him. It's not a good look for him or anybody else surrounding this, because he's going to get killed on social media, and he faked it, and it was bad. Because he went out on the stretcher, like somebody really connected with him in the privates, and all of us know if you've been hit there, it's very painful. But he didn't even get touched there, and he went down like he got shot. It was bad. It was just bad. And until he actually fights, I think this was one that people say, I'm not watching this again. Until he actually fights somebody that's kind of in their prime, like a regular fighter that's, you know, a true boxer that's kind of somewhat in his prime. And there are plenty of them out there. I can't give him any kind of legitimacy because I don't know. Like you said, it felt like it was a setup, and it was like a planned deal, like WWE or something. Like it was planned because the way he was laughing afterwards back, you know, backstage with his girl or his wife, it just didn't feel right at all.
Yeah. It looked like the guy took a dive. Now he got clocked. Yeah. He really got hit.
Yeah. He got hit,
but he jumped right back up.
Yeah.
And there was no 10 count. There was no fight's over. That fast. And maybe the deal was, once I go down, it's over. Give me my money. I'm out of here. Thank you. I had a great time tonight. I was the punching bag.
He made more money that fight than he did in his last 10 MMA fights.
I think he made $1 million.
Half a million, I think.
Half
it was.
A million?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I will not pay to watch that again unless, as you point out, he actually fights somebody. And then we'll see what kind of fighter he is. And then he wins. He's jumping on the ropes. He's pounding his chest, sticking out his tongue, which is 12 feet long. It's like, what are you doing?
my kids, they wanted to watch it too. And they were like, the first thing they said after he knocked him out was like, oh no, this is now they've already created a monster. Now it's made it worse. Cause now he thinks he's really legitimately a top notch professional boxer.
Right. So we'll see what happens there. Other thing to touch on here quickly. Some Dodger fans upset yesterday. In the ninth inning, Justin Turner struck out on a pitch that wasn't even close. Yeah. I mean, it was low and it was outside.
I think you could have called that a strike, Fred, in your umpiring days.
No, I would never have called that a strike.
I mean, you wouldn't have called that a strike.
Oh, no. It was clear that it was a bad call. But the umpire, Kevin Phil Cuzzy was the umpire. Yeah, he had a bad day. It's like he was a player, he went 0-for-5.
Yeah.
He really had a bad
day. And you can't really say it was just the Dodger side. It was the whole game. He had a bad day.
Yeah, he just had a bad day. It happens. You know, that's what he gets paid to do. That's his job. But occasionally everybody has a bad day. That speaks to, again, what we have talked about.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, but it there's a perfect example.
Because in the Rockies series, the opening series, there was one of the umpires had a bad game as well.
Yeah,
this was all over the place.
And I've been watching other games, and the guys are, you know, it's what it is. They're kicking it. They're having bad days. That's not an easy job. Either they signed up for it, I understand. It's not an easy job. I mean, everything is right there, and every mistake you make is broadcast. So it's not an easy job. But that's why if they'd go to the automated strike zone, it would eliminate all of this. You just don't want that. Would the Dodgers have won yesterday if Justin Turner had got on first base? I don't know. Probably not. But certainly that took the air out of their sail right there. And he was bad the whole game. The entire game he was bad.
Yeah, he didn't just miss a few calls here in one inning or anything like that. It was consistently bad throughout the whole game. There was a couple other ones that he rung somebody up, but it was in the pitch went over the other side's batter's box that he called a strike. Even Oro was like, man, he's having a tough day. This is bad.
Yeah, and that's why it'd be much better if they would go to the automated strike zone. Let's just eliminate that part of the game. Eliminate it. The umpire will still be behind the plate. He'll still call people out or safe at home. He'll still rule if it's foul or fair. He'll do all of those things. But let's just eliminate that. You can see it at home. You can see that box on the screen. You know if it's a ball or a strike. You should not know more than the people on the field. It just shouldn't be that way. You should not. They have replay to look at things that are really close, and sometimes they get them right and sometimes they get them wrong, but that's why they have replay. But in balls and strikes, that was the perfect example of why you don't want the game to be affected by that. You just don't. If this guy was having a good day, how differently would it have gone? I don't know. But if you're not sure, if you're a hitter and you're not sure where the strike zone is, and that's basically what this is, Rodney, you don't know where the strike zone is.
Yeah.
So now you're just, do I take a pitch? Do I swing at it if it's outside? If I swing at it and I miss it, it's a strike. But wait a minute, maybe he would have called it a ball. You don't know. Because the guy had a bad day. I'm saying the automated strike zone sooner than later is the way to go.
I'm not jumping on that bandwagon with you, Fred. I don't know. I know you paused to try to get me on your bandwagon. I'm not there yet.
I tried.
No, I'm not there yet. Yes, he had a bad day, and there'll be several more bad days, but I still think the human element of the umpire calling balls and strikes is something that I don't want to see go away. Sorry, Fred. Where does it end? Where will it end, Fred? Once you start doing that, where will it end? It's automated everything.
Well, you can't automate
automated baseballs.
How are you going to automate the baseball?
Automated players?
Yeah.
Or just be playing video games after a while? Is that what
exactly, Fred. Where's it going to end?
Well, I think the video games draw more people than the some cities
do. You ain't lying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Cincinnati, you know, I think they draw more for video games than they draw for the Reds.
Yeah.
Right? Kansas City.
Yeah. You just trot out a drone or a robot out there, and you're sitting at the controls telling them what the pitch.
I'll tell you one thing. If that was the case, I'd be a hell of a pitcher. All right, USC spring football. We'll do that later on during the 2 o'clock hour. When we come back, let's get you caught up on what has happened today, what you may have missed, and we'll do it with It's Lit.